Mike Golic Jr. joins us right now. We're excited about that. Mike, thank you so much for taking the time. I know it's a busy day. Thank you. We were just talking about a report from the Post-Gazette from Jerry Dulac. He wrote, the Steelers view Graham Barton out of Duke as a generational player. Is that too strong? Is that just right? How do you view this guy? And again, thank you for coming on.
No, sure. Thank you guys for having me. A generational player might be a bit strong, but I'll say this. Like every year we go through the draft class and we rank guys and prospects at different positions. I always like to circle back at the end. Like, who are my favorite guys? Who did I enjoy watching the most? What about that stuck out? And Graham Barton was one of the two guys in this offensive line class who was a legitimate joy to study. And when you look at his game, and I heard you guys talking about the position flexibility, the versatility, do I think he can be an NFL tackle? Probably not. Like, maybe in a pinch, maybe he could kick out there if a guy was injured. But if you put him down at center and guard, you're talking about a guy incredibly strong hands, that sort of vice grip that, you know, people my age, Ramon Foster and all his years at the Pittsburgh Steelers, kind of that same clamp. But also, I think an incredibly strong core, a great lower body that helps make sure that even if he gets beat a little bit up top, he stays in great position. And so, yeah, I think he's strong. I think he's incredibly athletic. And I think he's one of the guys that's been a real riser in this postseason draft process. So I wouldn't be surprised if he goes much earlier than people expected. I know teams like the Dallas Cowboys were hoping he'd make it down to the mid-20s. I just don't think he's going to be on the board at that point because he is a both quality player and extremely versatile player.
Mike, what do you think that, you know, the scouts were looking at? Like, are they going off his tape from his freshman year that, you know, him playing center? Was there a scout like at his pro day or at the combine was like, hey, let me see you snap. Let's see if you can get back to your old ways because, you know, he played 3 years at tackle and he hasn't played center since his freshman year. Like, what are people seeing that they think that he could be that transitional and generational talent at center, knowing that he hasn't played there in a long time?
Yeah, I think there's certain things about guys' game that kind of stick out. I had this conversation with Nate Tice about a different prospect in Troy Fautanu coming out of Washington, where you can just sort of see the way a guy carries himself. Like Fautanu is a good example, really squared off stance, the way that he carries himself in his pass sets. It all kind of mimics a center. Like Troy reminds me a lot of one of the Pouncey brothers in the way he moves. I would love to see him kick down to center because it's one of those things at center. If you're a guy with the aptitude from the neck up and you can teach you how to snap, it's a much easier position than all those other ones in there. You got help on damn near every play. No one's nearly as athletic. Yeah, you got some big pluggers in there that you'd have to work your way through. But in general, I think that transition to the interior, provided, again, you know, you can get the mechanics of the snap down, which isn't nothing, but that's something that throughout the offseason, I'm sure Graham, seeing the projections to the next level, has worked on with the people in his camp, has probably been asked about by teams. You can get that along and bring that along. And even if it's not center right away, even if you have to start off at guard, I do think a guy with his skill set and the way that he carries himself on the field, there's some things mechanically that automatically kind of show themselves well for the transition to center or the interior line.
So another guy that's been talked about and being mocked to the Steelers at 20 is Amarius Mims out of Georgia, 6'7", 340 pounds, and you can't teach that size at all. But he only played 7 games last year. Would that worry you, for the production, the limited production that he's had? Would that worry you if you were the Pittsburgh Steelers and you're looking to draft maybe your next right tackle or your left tackle in Amarius Mims?
So I think it would worry me only a little bit if you really needed him to play like right away and pressed into duty. That being said, he reminds me in an O-line form of Anthony Richardson from last year, where he gets the billing of big, incredible athlete, all these physical gifts. But when you actually pop on the tape, the technical stuff's not that far away. Anthony Richardson was the same story last year where you looked at him technically. He did a lot more of the quarterback things well. It's just a reps problem. You saw the difficulty with him was replicating it rep after rep because he just hadn't played enough football. And it's the same with Mims, where the stuff he does naturally, bending, being a knee bender and not a waist bender, where he puts his hands and arms, all these different things show up pretty well considering how little football he's played. The stuff that he has difficulty with all just comes with time and reps. And so I think the bones are there of a really good offensive lineman. And like you said, the physical ability that he presents, the physical profile that he has, is so rare, one of one in this class, that he's a guy in terms of, a little bit more raw prospect on the offensive line that I would probably be the most comfortable with in this class, just because some of the things he does from a technical standpoint aren't that far off. He just needs to play more ball.
Mike Golic Jr. joining us here on the Fan Morning Show. You can follow him on Twitter at Mike Golic Jr. That's pretty easy there, Mike. I wanted to ask you about a hypothetical. I'm sure you've been dealing with a million different hypotheticals doing the show that you do with your dad. If Graham Barton's there at 20 for the Steelers, but there's a couple of tackles there, and let's just use Mims as an example, would it be better for the Steelers, better bang for their buck? I know you say you like Barton a lot. Would it be better bang for the buck to get a tackle there and then maybe hope that one of those other centers is there in round two?
So there's other guys to like in this class. Like, I don't know what's going to happen with Jackson Powers Johnson, who was long thought to be out of Oregon the number one center in this class and the first interior lineman off the board. You know, Zach Frazier from West Virginia and a couple other guys in this class. But in my mind, I kind of think there's enough of a drop-off from Barton down to the rest of those dudes to say he'd be worth taking there. And again, the conversation we had about Mims is, hey, he's closer than most of the raw guys, but I still think Barton's closer to an easy day one starter that you can plug in at any of those interior spots. And I think in this NFL, in this day and age, where you've got less time on the field than ever with these guys, there's still some risk in going too much tools and traits over production. And I think Barton's that perfect blend of both. So I would probably err on the side of that, given the current state of offensive line in the NFL.
So we know that the Chicago Bears need a quarterback, and we know it's going to be Caleb Williams. And we can either, you know, we can either not include Caleb Williams in this question, or you can include Caleb Williams in this question. Who's the best player in this draft, in your opinion?
Ooh, the best player.
Don't do the Joe Alt thing.
I wasn't going to do the Joe Alt thing. I love Joe, and I believe he's a great player, but I do think it's probably Caleb or Marvin Harrison Jr. Like, I think Marvin's such a fascinating study, because I had this conversation with someone yesterday, you know, as the son of a former NFL player, and talking about what advantages that might provide a guy along the way. I said with Marvin, the lineage shows up in his game. Like, it's not just, hey, I know how to deal with and navigate the circumstances in the lead up to the combine. I know what to expect walking into an NFL locker room because my dad can prepare me for all those things. For Marvin, it shows up in, hey, how clean he is in and out of breaks, the polish in the route running, the way he works in his physical at the top of routes, the way he uses his hands to get off press at the line of scrimmage. All these things that look like 400-level route running from a guy that's just finishing up college, that I think you can largely attribute to the fact that he grew up with one of the best to ever do it in his house, wiping his butt from a young age. So I do think he's probably that guy. And for some reason, it hasn't been sexy to talk about through this draft cycle because he didn't test and because he's probably not a guy that's out there doing as much media as maybe some of the other prospects. But I think between him and Caleb Williams, you've probably got a 1A, 1B situation.
Why so much hype around J.J. McCarthy?
Because I think it's twofold. One, I've heard the comp to Kirk Cousins, like a little more higher-end athletic Kirk Cousins, and people in the NFL like feeling like you'll come in and do what they want. And they saw with J.J. McCarthy in college, hey, he was a guy that probably wanted to throw the ball more than he got to, but he got in where he fit in his system, and he helped them win games. He's got that winner thing on him going all the way back to high school. You saw the scouting report on him where he was telling recruits coming in, hey, if you're here to party and do this, chase girls, we're not doing that because we're bringing Michigan a title. Like, the NFL loves feeling like you don't have any other options and you don't want any other options. So there's that on one side. And then the other side is, I think, with a prospect with comparatively less tape, at least throwing the football than his counterparts, we see this all the time, where everyone in the NFL also loves feeling like they're better at their job than everyone else. Meaning, oh, we've got this ball of clay comparatively at quarterback compared to some of these other more fully formed prospects. I, great scout, great GM, great coach, can make this happen. We see this all. I mean, this is what got us into the Mitch Trubisky problem a few years ago when you had a draft full of guys that had played a ton of football. But man, you got an ability ball and all of a sudden these guys' eyes light up.
Is there a guy in the first round or that's mocked to go in the first round that you're just not buying the hype on?
I struggle a little bit with Tyler Guyton out of Oklahoma, another one of the offensive tackles in a draft where I think the over-under number in our book is set on 9.5 for offensive linemen in the first round. Oh, Tyler Guyton is an insane collection of skills. He is 6'8", incredibly long wingspan, a smooth mover, but again, we talk about it, and I know I'm beating a dead horse on this, but since 2011, you don't get a lot of time to develop these guys on field anymore. You don't get two-a-days. You don't get as many reps in a position that's the most unnatural on the field. And you see, I think, inconsistency in his motor on the field. Some of the technical stuff waxes and wanes as games go on. And I just – I worry a little bit about that because he's so tantalizing from a skill perspective, unless he ends up in, you know, one of those right spots. And I mean, God, if you're a guy that ends up in a place like San Francisco that needs O-line help, that's got one of those schemes that kind of mitigates technique and certainly has a guy in Trent on the other side who's a great teacher for a young, incredible athlete. I think it's always a bit of a gamble with guys like that late in the first round who, for the most part, you're expecting to come in and start, if not right away, then very soon after.
Mike, last thing here for you, man, and we really do appreciate your time. We are doing a marathon coming up in the summer to benefit local volunteer fire departments. And I know that you and Stu Gotts on ESPN, you did a 28-hour marathon. So you got any advice for us as we try to, you know, traverse through the airwaves late at night? You got it, like hydration? Is it a snacks thing? What do we got to do to be prepared for this thing?
Yeah, no, great questions all around. And as a survivor of three marathons at ESPN, both fantasy football and I think one fantasy hoops, you have to have snacks all around you because at some point in the night, it just becomes about survival. It's not about nutrition. It's not about anything else. You just need stuff within arm's reach. You just reach and you eat and you keep moving. That's the only goal. You've got to be like a shark where if you stop swimming, you're probably going to pass out. So I would recommend that. A lot of quick energy. Think M&Ms, pretzels, chips, all that stuff where, yeah, are you going to feel the best later? No, but you're not worried about later. You're worried about surviving here and now.
Mike, we appreciate the time, man. Thank you so much for jumping on with us. And now I have the image of, like, I started to think about radio hosts working together where one may have wiped the other's butt at some point in their lives. With you working with your dad, you put that image in my head. So thank you for that.
Hey, you're welcome. He puts the image in my head that eventually in the next like two decades, I'm going to have to return the favor as he starts to age. So let that one haunt your dreams now, fellas.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it.
Oh, that was really good.
Really good.
With Mike Golic Jr. He's super impressive. I think he, you know, you get the nepotism thing. Like, oh, his dad's a Radio Hall of Famer. So he just put his son on ESPN. No, he's really, really, really good.
Really good.